Good morning, Teachers on Fire. Welcome back to another live conversation here in the virtual Teachers on Fire studio. I am excited for this one. Have been looking forward to it for a while. Today's Teacher on Fire is Ashley Aoki. Ashley is a settler and educator in School District 67 in BC with experience teaching grades 1-5. And she currently serves on the leadership team at the Network of Inquiry and Indigenous Education. Ashley is passionate about educating for quality and equity so all learners can thrive. You can follow Ashley on X at Miss Ashley Aoki. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to light it up?
I am absolutely ready to light it up.
Well, I've been following you, Ashley, for some time, and I have to say, what a privilege, what a joy it is to finally connect in real time. So I can't wait to get into this. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your wonderful school district and school? What does that look like?
So I currently serve through school district number 67 in the Okanagan Valley, and I am a grade 5 teacher currently. The school that I work in is in Penticton, one of the largest elementary schools. And it's really unique because there are a high percentage of students who are English language learners. And so being in the Okanagan Valley, that is unique because there are lots of families who settle in our area, but happen to attend my school. So that's a really cool conversation that I get to have with families, and also considerations that I get to make to ensure that I'm removing barriers for families and students. And I really enjoy working for 67 as well. This is the district that I went to school in. And so in my very first year, I actually served in the elementary school that I was taught in. So it was kind of fun going back to my elementary school, except I was allowed to be in the staff room. And I was like, oh my gosh, we weren't allowed to do this as a kid, but so fun to do it as to be there as a teacher and love on the school.
That is awesome to hear. So for those listeners who are coming to us from all over the world, literally all over the world, we're talking about Canada here. We're talking about British Columbia out on the West Coast. And when a lot of people think about BC, they think about Vancouver, right on the coast, big city. But of course, Ashley is coming to us from the interior, or that's a different region, right? I shouldn't use that word maybe. Okay, I'm on the right track. And Ashley, I think the neat thing that I took away from what you just described is we don't usually think of a lot of English language learners in the interior of BC. So that's an interesting, maybe an evolution, right, in those communities. I am thrilled to say that Judy Halbert is joining us here in this conversation live. So Judy, good morning to you and welcome. Thank you for joining. And we're going to be talking about you, I think, here in a couple of minutes as well. But Ashley, before we get there, let's start with story time. Would you share with us about a low moment or some kind of adversity that you've experienced in your teaching or education journey and describe how you overcame it?
Yeah, so I think that anyone who's an early career teacher can relate to how challenging it is being an early career teacher. It was once described to me that it's kind of like drinking from a fire hydrant turned on, and you're just hoping that something is going in. I remember everything felt new. I was putting in long hours. Oftentimes I was changing grades, and it was a really tough first, I would say, 5 years of my career, just because everything, even though I had left university and I was full of hope and starry-eyed, there was a lot of things that I was learning brand new, writing report cards for the first time, assessment. There were a couple days that I walked home because I lived close to my first school in tears because I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I hope if you're an earlier career teacher and you're listening to this, you feel a sense of like those experiences, that thinking process is very normal, and just want to normalize it for those folks. And I was really lucky to have some amazing mentors, but also people who had been in the game for a long time that would check in on me every single day. One of the women she taught next door to me, and she would come in and just see how I was doing, or I had a good friend and we go out for runs. And it's really interesting. Sometimes it's like your identity can kind of morph, and then teaching can be the identity I found in my early career. So these were the people that reminded me that I was many things, including a teacher and educator, and I was allowed to go out and celebrate life outside of the classroom.
That was so well put. Thank you for that, Ashley. And I think that is assuring. I hope that is assuring for those new teachers who are finding that they are getting pulled into this vortex of, am I anything more than my work, right? Or is there any existence beyond this? Yes, there is hope. There is hope. And those first years are very difficult, but things do evolve and you find certain equilibriums, right, that are sustainable as you go forward. And I'm sure we'll touch on a few more of those as we continue. Judy says, Linda is watching and listening now as well. So great. Welcome, Linda. And we're about to get into why those two names are significant. So let's move into that, Ashley. I'd like to talk about the Network of Inquiry and Indigenous Education. So let's talk about NOIIE.
Yes.
What is it and how did you get connected?
So the Network of Inquiry and Indigenous Education was founded by two superstars in my eyes. Two people who I am like, I'm a fan of in my home, Linda Kayser and Judy Halbert. And their primary mission and goal is so that every student crosses the stage with dignity, purpose, and options. And I think that's a beautiful thread, not only in the grade 12 year, but all throughout school, that children have dignity, purpose, and options all throughout. And it's a really amazing community to be networked, to be a part of, because their focus is on every strand of education that can support students in those areas. So social emotional learning, literacy and language arts, mathematics. And it's amazing because educators at every level can connect in somehow. They really believe in that community mindset as well, tapping on through like a scan, for example, through the spirals of inquiry, which I know we'll talk about later, receiving support from the community, whether that's the paraprofessionals, parents. So I really love the phrase last year at the symposium where I met Linda and Judy. The framework was about being better together. And I just think that that's such a important mindset for educators. Sometimes education can feel like it's a solo game, but it's so important that educators connect. And to me, the Network of Inquiry is a beautiful way to be supported in the challenges, but also in the triumphs and celebrations of education as we continue to move towards equity and quality in our education system. And then I met them, so I really have enjoyed being a part of Twitter, and this is how I met Tim and some amazing educators, not only in British Columbia, but all across the world. And I happened to have read Linda and Judy's most recent book, Leading Through the Spirals of Inquiry, and literally, I could have highlighted every single word and sticky noted every single page on the book. I was like, now it's losing the purpose, Ash. So anyways, I was super, super excited to read something that resonated so much with what I believed fundamentally. I'm a woman of color who is in a school system and still was figuring out where my place is in the system. And to me, this became a lot of the what and the why. So when I read the book, I was able to bring in some of the magic that they had shared. For example, Ignite series they had talked about, and they had talked about using the spirals of inquiry, learning tours. And so I was able to bring those into my school. and really celebrate and lift up the work, and was given such support in my school to do so. And then I was sharing my experience on Twitter, and Linda and Judy had followed me, and I was like, oh my gosh, like so excited. And then I went to the symposium, and that happens every May on the West Coast. If you're an educator listening, I'd highly recommend going. And I just felt electrified, because every presenter that presented, I was like, oh my gosh, absolutely. Yes, I connect with you. Yes, I totally resonate with that. Oh my goodness, I haven't thought about that, but I need to store it in my back pocket and integrate this into my practice. And Linda happened to be sitting behind me in one of the sessions, and I was like starry-eyed. I was like a celebrity was sitting behind me, and I was like, oh my gosh, she's sitting behind me. And then she tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I really wanted to meet you. And I think I must have been like a deer in the headlights, because, you know, this is someone who I've read her book, integrated their practices anyways. So then they ended up inviting me to be part of their leadership team, and it's such a joy.
So good, and such a privilege to have these two in the audience with us today. I'm just soaking all of this in. And before we move on, I want to go back to, I pulled up their Amazon summary of the book, and I don't know if this is doing it justice. I'm sort of cringing in the thought that maybe the authors, I know the authors would do a much better job, but maybe I'll need to have them on a future podcast, ladies. That would be a privilege. But just some of the themes from leading through spirals of inquiry. So we've got overcoming inequality to create genuine equity and change outcomes, transform learning environments at both the school and district level, clarify direction for new professional learning based on evidence from research, challenge long-held biases and assumptions, effectively incorporate self-reflection and continuous improvement. I have to say that book was very valuable as well for me in my master's program at VIU. And the two were, Judy and Linda were able to join us for that. And ladies, I don't know if you remember me being there, but it was really wonderful to study under them for a while as well. And that book is one that leads us right into our next question, Ashley, and this whole idea of the spiral of inquiry. Before I go to Ashley, let me give you a visual of the spiral of inquiry. And again, this comes from the same authors we've been talking about, Judy Halbert and Linda Kaiser. And you can see here that it starts with, should be starting with the scan phase, yes, and then focusing, developing a hunch, learning, taking action, and checking. And the three big picture questions here in the middle, and I'm sort of going over this actually for the podcast listeners, but what is going on for our learners? How do we know? And why does it matter? That's sort of what gets this thing started at the scanning stage. So I hope I'm not stealing too much from you, but
tell
us a little bit more about the spiral of inquiry. What makes this, in your opinion, such a powerful vehicle for professional learning? And can you share an example from your own journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the thing that makes it incredibly powerful is it honors student voice. In the beginning stage, the scan, educators at all levels are invited to ask their students three questions. Number one, who are two adults in the school community that you feel connected to? Number two, what are you learning about? And number three, why is it important? And those answers, I'm such a qualitative data woman or mixed methods data woman, that I really appreciated the information that students were giving me through interviews. And the CEAs were able to also help in this process. And it was a fascinating process that allowed me to understand A, what was working well, and B, what needed more focus. And then to be really curious about how come this was, how come it was so. And so I think if we look at the conversations that are happening at a provincial level, and it's certainly one that's happening within my district, a lot of folks are really saying student voice is a key pillar to education and needs to be put on the forefront. And so I think that there's nothing more important than starting in this way. Now, Linda and Judy would both say that this process starts slow, but you're going fast later on. Interviewing, of course, as you know, as an educator, it takes time. You're not having 25 conversations with students that happen, you know, in 25 minutes. Educators are very busy, but this is time well spent. And the thing that I continue to think about, even in the scan, is how do I know what my students know or don't know, or what they see as important or not, if I don't ask them? So I started to collect all of that data at the very beginning of the school year, and it took about 4 to 6 weeks, I would say. And this allowed me to focus on a question around writing in my classroom, because lots of other pieces were being highlighted. I saw that my students felt really connected in our school. And so I was able to go, if writing is the focus, I wonder what's up about this. I need to get some more information. So that allowed me to see that my students had a particular story about themselves as writers, but also needed some more support developing these skill sets. Beyond something maybe more narrow, they needed things like supports around how to develop their ideas, add detail into their writing, some assessment practices that they could be involved in and participate in and have ownership of. And so that really allowed me to go from scanning to focus, developing that hunch of, I wonder how come this is happening, what other information might I need, to do some learning. And the thing that I love about the network of inquiry is that there's several educators all across British Columbia and all over the world who are using the spirals of inquiry, but they also are sharing case studies on the website. And so let's say you're an educator that's like, oh, well, I have a question or I have an inquiry that's around reading. Then likely someone else in the province has written a case study and might be able to support you through their writing and their experience with professional development or tools, strategies that they've tried. And so I was so lucky because one of the schools on the West Coast, Beech Grove Elementary, had shared some of the practices that they had used. And I was able to adopt those into my classroom and really see that they're working. So we're taking action right now, and I'm getting some feedback. Two of my students who really writing was something that was a stretch for. I heard them last week. They're like, I can't wait to write, or this is so exciting. Can we have longer? And that's how I know that what we're doing is working. I haven't gone through the final check stage yet, but that's something that's coming. The other thing that's super cool about the spiral is that it is exactly that, a spiral, which means that it goes forever and ever. You can go backwards, you can go forwards, you can spend more time in one certain area. Let's say you'd like to do a little bit more learning. You can go back, take action, and go, oh, maybe that didn't work super well, or maybe we need to switch something up, and you can go backwards or forwards. And then also you can change the inquiry as well and start the scan process again. So I think that this process is a framework that is valuable, not only at the elementary level, but all throughout and at any level that you work in, whether you're at the district level, whether you are at, you know, an administrative level in your school setting, a teacher, paraprofessional, like this is powerful learning.
It is. And that's where I wanted to end this before we move on, is just that idea. I mean, you started with the idea of student voice, getting the student voice involved in this process. But the other piece of it, I think, that is really powerful is the teacher agency And I'm sure you would agree that just this idea that teachers and educators are able to drive, I don't know if that's the right word, but they're able to formulate or direct their own learning. And that's, I think, what gives this so much power. So I've been through this with my staff once. I've been through this on my master's journey, and it's been very valuable both times. A lot of thinking involved. This is not your sit and get kind of professional learning. This is very, very active professional learning. But as we know from the classroom, that's where the richest learning comes from.
Oh, and Tim, just to put in one more thing here, the spirals of inquiry as well is grounded in research as well. So for educators who are wondering, what's the research that supports this? There's tons of research connected to the spirals of inquiry as well. And Judy and Linda are both professors at the University of British Columbia. And I learned from another teacher that there was a ton of collaboration around this process. So I think that powerful learning also is grounded in research. So I just also wanted to highlight that before we moved on.
Absolutely. So for any building leader at any level, or district leader, if you're thinking about what's our plan for 23-24 in terms of professional learning, think about the spiral of inquiry. Think about this as a possible vehicle to bring some really rich learning to your community. Well, I'm enjoying this conversation, Ashley. There's still so much ground to cover, so let's jump into the next question. What is our next step as educators toward reconciliation with our Indigenous friends and neighbors? We've accomplished a lot, admittedly, I think, in the last decade or so. We've got a few things under our belt. We've got the first principles of learning that are sort of ubiquitous across a lot of our BC schools. We've got curricular integration, land acknowledgements. We've got the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and of course we have an official national holiday where we observe the work that has been done and some of the legacy that needs to be restored. So what do you think is our next step as we look forward in this area?
I honestly believe the next step is decolonization. And so decolonization, to me, means looking at and doing almost an audit of all of the practices that have been and continue to be harmful to Indigenous peoples, to people of color. I really believe that this is the next step forward. And it's interesting because my fiance actually works for the local government. And recently they were also talking about policies and protocols that have been put in place and where they come from, what they stem from. Do they stem from an energy of control? Do they stem from an energy of love of people? I think if we look at decolonization as well in an elementary classroom, for example, it's really breaking down the barriers of where folks believe learning exists. And so I think a traditional classroom, the philosophy would be that learning exists within the four walls of the classroom. But I really believe a step, not the only step, of decolonization is realizing that learning exists multiple places, including outside. And our Indigenous peoples, for time immemorial, have been showing the way in that area as well. Just this past week, my superintendent came and observed the learning that I do with my students on the land. And it was really amazing to be able to weave in Indigenous ways of knowing and being and the information that comes from a local territory. And elders and scientists collaborated to create this beautiful ethnobotany guide. And so it was amazing to be able to showcase that work, but also showcase my students' learning and really share that deep and rich learning happens here. And a lot of Indigenous peoples have been leading the way on that since, like I said, time immemorial. So I would say decolonization would be the next step. And that step, like many things, just as the First Peoples Principles of Learning tells us, is going to take a lot of patience and a lot of time.
It's so interesting when this idea of decolonization merges with other good pedagogical research that comes from other places. I'm thinking of Dr. Peter Liljedahl. It's really interesting. If you read Building Thinking Classrooms, he talks about defronting the classroom and sort of reimagining the learning environment. He's not coming at it at all from any kind of first people's principles. At least that I recall after reading the book. But you just see sort of a merging of those ideas, right, of decentralizing the source of learning and information. As you look around education today, Ashley, what else is setting you on fire?
Well, something that's very exciting, Tim, very exciting, is that I, like you mentioned at the beginning, am part of the Network of Inquiry and Indigenous Education's leadership team. And one of the questions that Linda and Judy had posed to the leadership team is, how do we amplify the work of the network? And this is something that I will believe in until I retire and beyond that. And so I am a huge podcast listener, and that's how I receive a lot of information when I'm curling my hair or driving to work. And so I'm really excited because in January of 2024, I will be hosting the Spirals of Inquiry, an educational podcast. Woohoo! And it'll be available on Spotify or wherever you can get a podcast. This is something that is new, and I have to give huge kudos to you, Tim, because you had posted a brilliant blog post, and I remember in one of the sentences it said something like, begin before you're ready, or something along those lines. And I was like, I know nothing about hosting a podcast, and had shared the idea with Linda and Judy, and they both loved it. So you had really kind of set out a template or a framework, I should say, for me to be able to start as someone who literally knew nothing. So this is something that's super exciting. I love listening to people's stories. I'm such a curious cat. And being able to share the powerful work that is supporting all learners in education all across the province. And I'll soon be interviewing people all over the world. So that's kind of cool.
That is so cool. Ashley, I am so proud of you and excited for what's about to come. And hey, I am known in some quarters for my strong opinions. So feel no pressure or obligation at any point to follow some of those. I did publish a very prescriptive article at some point. So if you go in other directions, more power to you. But yes, I often recall a past guest that I've had here on Teachers on Fire, Adam Welcome, who said everyone should have a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds really daunting and ridiculous to a lot of people. And obviously, I would never should that on any teacher. But there is, once you get into it and you realize the power of voice, if you boil it down to, I mean, we're doing video here, but you can do just audio. You can, it can be as I've done some podcasting in the past using just my phone and my voice memos app that can be published, and the quality is not too bad. So to any educator out there listening and thinking about and visioning about 2024, think about starting an education podcast. And Ashley, I'll be cheering you on, and I'm excited. I'm really excited. I think a podcast, as you well know, if you're a podcast listener, it's such a powerful medium. People will settle in and really listen, you know, while they're folding laundry, while they're working out, whatever it is. They'll give you more time and attention than they will in video. That's just a fact. And so it is a really neat medium, and I look forward to you sharing the good word about Spirals of Inquiry. Watch for it, educators. I'll be reposting on X, whatever Ashley is able to share from that podcast as it comes out in the spring. So that's really exciting. On a similar on a similar vein, Ashley, as you think about this school year, I mean, that's a massive step forward professionally. I would say there's your professional learning right there, all the conversations you'll be having. But is there anything else that in your practice, in your classroom, in your school, you've been thinking about lately, or you've kind of identified as an objective this year?
Yeah, I mean, my my dream, probably since I was a little girl, is to land up in a position just like yours, Tim, in administration. And I think that professionally, I continue to look at administrators within my space, but also I continue to think about what leadership is and how I can serve my school in an informal leadership role. So there's a couple of things that I'm particularly interested in. We have a conversation happening at the district level right now around anti-racism. And that is something that is at the forefront, I think, not only for our district, but all across the province. And so that kind of ties in to, like you had mentioned, Tim, decolonization through a bunch of practices, and really being considerate of whose voice is heard, but also whose voice is missing. And I think that those two questions are really important in education and always have been important in education. So that's something that I'm really interested in. I also I'm really fortunate to serve as the Truth and Reconciliation co-facilitator. So I have lots of conversations at the school level, but also at the district level around how we can continue moving towards truth and reconciliation in action in a meaningful, intentional way. So that would be an area that I'm continuing to learn and grow in. And I know that this is like kind of turning into a bit of a list, but assessment has been a huge, and I know that this is something that you've talked about too, Tim, on Twitter, conversation that I'm continuing to learn about, wrestle with. Even more recently, I've been having this wrestling around homework and what barriers are in place for certain students. And it kind of, I'm just wrestling with all of those things. So it's interesting because I'm interested in so many things. and some would say that might not have a focus, but I feel like it all kind of ties underneath of the umbrella of equity. So I hope that answers your question.
It absolutely does. And yeah, I feel some of those same pulls. That's why you're such a great follow on X, by the way, Ashley. And you're, by the way, something we haven't even touched on. We don't have time for it all, but Ashley is a great sharer of things going on right in her practice. And I feel like you've shared pictures, right? And artifacts and different things. So those are some of the best shares that I see from teachers. I mean, once I see pictures of student work, wow, I'm interested. We're going to get into some lighter questions now, Ashley, as we start to wind down. But is there a phone app, a personal habit, or a productivity hack that contributes to your success and keeps your fire burning?
Yes. So this year, was it this year? Anyways, I had asked my family for what's called an aura ring. And I don't know how popular they are in the world, but I had seen it. Someone else had it. And it is a ring, much like a smart watch would be, where it can track your sleep, restfulness, what other things? Oh, your activity daily. And it gives you reports daily on a 100-point scale. And then it'll tell you what you need. It also includes mindfulness and meditation. It includes some, you know, different recommendations. Like, for example, if you had, you know, a below 85 sleep the night before, it might say reduce your screen time, or, you know, did you drink caffeine before bed? And I think that that's really helped me to understand my body better and to also pay attention to what I need. I'm someone who tends to push myself past my limits. And so it really is a good check. So this is a bit more expensive, but it connects to my phone. And I really enjoy having something that I know supports my health and allows me to check in at the end of the day and see how I'm doing.
This is not a sales push by any means, but in case anyone is watching the video or the YouTube version of this, this is an Aura ring. I feel like I've heard about these, Ashley. I've never actually looked at them. And yeah, you've got me very interested. So maybe something to put on the Christmas wish list, but that is really neat. So it monitors your, does it monitor your heart rate? Did you say that too?
So it monitors your stress levels. It monitors your, it monitors your resting heart rate. It monitors your activity, your sleep. It's known mostly in the research world or in the health world as more of a sleep support. And so every morning when I wake up, it'll give me a score out of 100. And they give you little crowns if you have a sleep over 85 to 95. But then it gives you really interesting data about the best time to go to bed. So it'll give you this range and then it'll alert you and say, hey, it's time to get ready for bed. And so I really have enjoyed using it and getting to understand my body a little bit better in that way. And as an educator, I mean, it's so much easier to serve community from a fuller cup.
Yes, yes, we cannot pour from an empty cup. And on that note, that's a good segue, Ashley, into this question. I have a feeling you're going to enjoy talking about this one. What is another area of learning for you outside of education when you leave the building? What kinds of activities really restore your fire?
Oh, I am a huge runner. And so I spend a lot of time in nature. Nature is a place that restores me and nourishes me. So I do a lot of meditation while in motion. And so I run a lot. I also really enjoy reading. And I read for professional purposes, but I also read for pleasure. And in the wintertime, I mean, it's wintertime in our area right now and there's snow on the ground. I really enjoy being up in the mountains, and my partner and I just got into skate skiing. And let me tell you, that is hard. Skate skiing is harder than it looks. Those people who skate ski, they make it look like a breeze. And my first time did not look breezy or easy by any stretch of the imagination.
What is skate skiing? Are you skating down ice? What's happening?
Good question. So, cross country skiing is a particular motion in which you are in tracks and you're going forward in motion with poles. And skate skiing, you're out of tracks. Cross country skiing, for reference, it's not going down huge hills like you would if you were downhill skiing, if you're in an area where you can downhill ski. So you're on more gradual or flat terrain. But skate skiing, you're out of the tracks and you're doing a skating motion, but with skis. And so everything has to be super fluid. So yeah, that's skate skiing. I don't know how well I did capturing it for skate skiers, but
I always tell people the only reason I know how to downhill ski is because my skating skills from childhood kick in, and that's how I make it down the hill. So now I've got another related skill to learn. Thank you for that, Ashley. You're welcome. Our way to our lightning round. Are you feeling ready?
Oh, I am feeling ready.
Okay, let me take off that banner over your face there. Okay, we've got some questions, and I'll ask you to keep your answers brief and to one pick if you can.
Okay.
Starting at Education X, who do we need to follow on X right now?
Trevor McKenzie.
All right. Point us to an ed tech tool that you currently love using in your classroom or professional practice.
This one's a tricky one. I use my blueprint quite a bit, and that's been piloted in the district, but I also find it really supportive.
That's a portfolio tool. Can we call it that? Yes.
Yes, a portfolio tool.
Recommend one book, one that you've been reading lately or one of your all-time faves.
Okay. Aside from Learning Through Spirals of Inquiry,
right?
Recently I have been reading Feeling Seen by Dr. Jodi Carrington.
Okay. And oh, yeah.
I highly recommend that book.
I know you're a podcast listener. You shared that with us. What is one near the top of your list these days?
Okay. I have two. I'm breaking the rule.
Sure.
The The first one is an educational one, and it's Free Range Humans by Rod Allen and Jal Mehta on Spotify. And the second one is We Can Do Hard Things with Glennon Doyle, Abby Wambach, and Amanda Doyle.
Okay, well said. On the subject of podcasts and as a support to my work here, Ashley, who is one educator that you would recommend I interview on the Teachers on Fire podcast?
I'm really not doing so good following these rules, Tim. So I have three. Okay. Judy Halbert, Linda Kaiser,
yes,
and Trevor McKenzie.
All right. Well, those are all fair, and I think we have to put Judy and Linda together. That makes sense. They're a package deal, right?
Yes, they're a package deal.
Now, not everyone is a YouTube subscriber, Ashley. So if you have to pass on this one, that's okay. But is there one channel that you find value in?
Okay, this is an interesting one because recently I have actually been watching Cesar Millan's videos. And I know that sounds...
The dog whisperer? Yes. Okay.
He is so fascinating. And I find that his strategies to support dogs, and this is going to sound interesting and you might go, with one eyebrow up, is I find that he is doing very similar things that I do to support students in regulation. He is often focused on human behavior. And if they're in a self-regulated state, their dogs are in self-regulated states. And I find that same conversation is what I'm noticing is important in education. Self-regulation and that feeling of that particular energy flows out into the classrooms. So I love watching him. And I said to my fiance yesterday, like, this man is unbelievable. And his thought process, and he can read people like this. So I really enjoy watching him.
There's something really wonderful about watching great educators in action, even those, and sometimes especially those outside of our normal space. Just for fun, Ashley, what are you streaming these days? Whether it's Netflix, Apple, Prime, maybe it's nothing. What are you watching for entertainment?
I don't watch very much television at all. Yeah, my fiance and I are going to watch Avatar later today, though. So sometimes we watch movies, but we don't really stream anything.
Fair enough. Well, what are the best ways, Ashley, for Teachers on Fire to connect with you and your exciting upcoming work?
So I am on Twitter or X. I feel like I'll always call it Twitter. There's something about that little word.
Yeah.
And it is at Miss Ashley Aoki. And then I'm on LinkedIn, Ashley Aoki. And those are great places to follow me.
And I have to apologize. I've been saying Aoki this whole time, and you were very gracious about that. But Aoki it is. Thank you so much, Ashley. And thank you for joining me today. Yeah, no, this was a ton of fun. I've been looking forward to it for so long. I kept you way over time, but I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Yeah. And just before I end, and I forgot to do this before, but I'd really like to say my deepest appreciations to the Sialch people. I'm joining from their traditional territory, which they've resided on since time immemorial. And it's such a joy and a gift to be here, to be joining you, Tim. You are someone who I love to follow because what you share lands. And it's so amazing to be able to have community through social media in this way and to continue to light each other up and to feel connected. And so thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to connecting with all of you and to you, Tim, online.
Absolutely. All of that is mutual, Ashley. I've really, really enjoyed this. Thank you, Teachers on Fire, one more time for joining us today, whether it's on YouTube or on the podcast. We value your time and we appreciate your engagement. We'd love to hear from you on social media. Ashley just gave her handles and you'll find me at Teachers on Fire on just about any platform. One more time, I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and I'm so grateful that you decided to spend some of your day with us listening and engaging. I hope that in some way the content you heard from Ashley Aoki sparked your thinking and ignited your practice. And I'll meet you next week right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast. Take care, everyone. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Even when you feel low, you can still go. Even when you feel slow, you can still go. Even when there's no hope, you can still go. I never answer to no, man, I still go. Go, go.